It's very likely you've had to interact with law enforcement at least once.
It's also very likely you were the one under suspicion of something or other.
Either way, the one who decides whether or not you were actually committing a crime in that moment
is the cops. But what happens next? Court, a trial, judges and juries?
Not quite. There's one more person who can decide your fate.
Prosecutorial discretion coming up.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
All right, David, what are we going to be talking about this week?
Well, this is something that I've been thinking about for a while, but recently I heard a story that got me thinking about it again. The ability for prosecutors, district attorneys and such, to decide which cases they'd want to prosecute.
Yeah, prosecutorial discretion.
Yes,
I think that's the term for that. Okay, that's interesting. You know, I've thought something similar about how people talk about the police in, like, a particular thing when there's like a law being passed that they don't like. They're like, yeah, I like the police are going to enforce that though. And how they're like the last line of defense for freedom. But maybe we should just talk about that concept in general, having a job but not having to do it.
Right.
So what's the problem you see with prosecutorial discretion?
Well, the initial problem that I see is with prosecutorial discrimination, where they can just you can have two people who commit the same crime and the prosecutor can choose to prosecute one and not the other just because he doesn't like that person.
True. Or you could have the same crime be committed by two different people in two different places and yield wildly different results under the same law.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty messed up. I mean, that's just blatantly unfair.
Right. Like, you could easily end up with a system now. And I don't know if anything like exactly like this happened, but definitely things adjacent to this happened, but this would be kind of extreme. If the district attorney is a member of the KKK, then the local KKK chapter could just get away with lynchings because who's going to prosecute them?
Oh, I think that's absolutely happened before. Maybe not that one prosecutor, but in certain geographical areas. I think that was the argument made, is that it was made about jury nullification, at least, which we talked about before, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm sure the same thing happened at the prosecutorial level. Some prosecutors just in the South would refuse, or in certain areas would just refuse to prosecute lynchings, but other places would refuse to charge like runaway slaves, for example.
Right.
Because they thought that the law was wrong.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing, is it goes both ways. Cause the thing that got me thinking about this was this guy, and I don't need to go through the particulars of this case, but basically he got charged and convicted for some BS. But for a while, prosecutorial discretion was working in his favor because all the local district attorneys knew that it was BS. The only reason this got pushed so far is because he had personally offended a local police officer, or a sheriff, I think. And the sheriff was out for blood and eventually got the state attorney general to take the case. But you know, the idea was presented like, this is why prosecutorial discretion is good, is because when a local sheriff has beef with you, the prosecutor can say, no, that's BS, we're not doing that.
Yeah, but you're essentially just kicking it up a level, though. Because you could have the same thing happen right now with what I had mentioned earlier. The sheriff could be your bro and be totally fine with what you're doing. I mean, and this is the case you normally hear it applied, I think, from it not so much the prosecutor side of things, but in the current political climate, there's like this idea that prosecutors are on one side of the political aisle, whereas law enforcement tends to be on the other. And while I'm not exactly opposed to the idea of having different political motivation groups sharing different responsibilities that they would normally have to cooperate in order to make the government work, because that in and of itself provides this idea of the checks and balances. But that's not something I don't think that was actually ever architected or defined at this level, right? You normally hear separation of powers or whatever, that's talking about like high levels of government when it comes to executive branches and the legislature and courts. But at the level, like at your local level, where, you know, you actually will interface with your government the most, if, for example, you hear like new sweeping gun legislation has passed, and legislation is what empowers prosecutors to prosecute, but also so does law enforcement. They have to bring people to the prosecutor to prosecute, because the prosecutor does not go around looking for whether or not crimes have been committed. Those are reported to the police, and the police then...
Right, the police arrest some guy and say, we got this guy, what do you want to do?
Yeah, and the prosecutor decides whether they want to charge him. And then I guess the third level is then you have some discretion by judges, because I forget what it's called, but there's a... I think it may be a directed verdict. I'm not a lawyer, you know, TM. But there is this idea as well of judges being able to overturn... make decisions based on the, you know, while you are entitled to a trial by your peers, you don't actually have to have one. The judge can just do it. You have a bench trial, that's what that's called, where the judge is who well sits in judgment, you know,
right,
hears arguments from both sides and then decides themselves. But even if you did have a jury, even if you were, you know, convicted, the judge also gets to determine your sentencing, you know,
right?
So it's like, yep, you're guilty of this crime, I assign you to, you know. A good example of this case was, I forget his name, Gary Plochet in Louisiana. This was a few years back. His son had been kidnapped by a pedophile and taken out of state. And so when eventually the pedophile was arrested and brought back, but when he was in the airport, the father, Gary Plochet, 180/360 no scopes the guy in the airport, back when you could carry a gun in the airport, and just shoots the guy in the face and then gets arrested. He's then prosecuted because, well, it's on camera. Like, there are videos of this happening, so you can't deny whether it happened or not. But a lot of people were still very sympathetic to Gary. So he ended up being prosecuted because the prosecutor kind of just had to, and then ended up taking a plea deal because, in the prosecutor's words, something to the effect of, ain't no jury in Louisiana at that time was going to convict a man for shooting a pedophile. That's paraphrasing, but that's essentially how he said it.
Okay.
And so he was convicted of shooting him after, you know, he plead out, and he got like four years probation, I think, and that was it. And then when they asked him, you know, he ended up in like a hospice care at the end of his life, and like some reporter asked him, and they're like, so do you regret anything? He's like, I'd do it again. Like, just, so there's multiple levels to that, but like, I don't think that just because you have so many people involved and they all have some kind of discretion, that's going to work out, right? You know, like I was kind of talking about earlier, you know, there's this idea that, oh, well, new gun legislation has been passed, now prosecutors can prosecute you for doing certain things. But if the police disagree, they don't have to actually report you for doing it. Like, what most people don't realize is that when you're pulled over by the police on the side of the road, I mean, for some people, they don't even know that a warning is an option. You've never received one for one reason or the other. And for other people, they're very, very aware that warnings are a thing. Like, that police officer has the discretion at that moment to cite, to give you a citation or not,
mm-hmm.
or to arrest you or not. You know, realistically, even if it's illegal and wrong, the police could kind of arrest you whenever they want.
Yeah, they can. Because you can't fight back. That's assaulting an officer.
Yeah, it's illegal to fight being wrongfully arrested.
Technically, no. But don't try it. For your own safety, just don't do it. Like, you are technically entitled to your right to self-defense against a police officer, but it is then up to a court to decide whether the officer was in the right, and they normally find in favor of the officer in cases like that.
Yep, so you're better off just getting arrested,
like,
and dealing
with it. You
would
need to have it, like, on camera that this officer is trying to kill you to get away with that.
Yeah. So... that all being said, I know that you don't like that essentially prosecutorial discretion might as well just be called prosecutorial discrimination, because mm-hmm. that's really what it is. Like, the word discrimination actually just means to differentiate or to decide between two things.
Yes.
And so
it just normally has this negative connotation of deciding unfairly.
Right. Which I would love to see applied here, because it almost certainly always will be, mm-hmm. you know. But is that issue something you have with all of these levels? Like, for example, the police don't necessarily have to, you know, decide in that moment whether or not they think you're breaking the law. Or they right now have that discretion where they can go, and I don't know that that's illegal or not. Like, and this happens, I think, way more than people realize. Yeah. The police just look at you doing something they don't like and assume that you're doing something illegal so they can go ahead and arrest you and cite you for it. I've seen more than...
And then it's up to the prosecutor to decide, is this actually illegal? Is it worth taking this guy to court, or do we let him go?
Right. But the police officer gets to be a bully in that moment and just arrest somebody because right. he wants to. I think the only time you ever see any kind... I'm sure there's prosecutorial guidelines, you know? Like, because the prosecutor is an elected person, typically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the elected person is not always going to be the person in that courtroom. They can hire their own assistant district attorneys and stuff like that to work in their office that aren't elected. They're appointed.
Right, just like how the sheriff has his deputies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sheriffs are elected. Prosecutors are elected. Judges are elected. And juries are not elected, but appointed. Or they're sourced.
Right.
You know, because why would you... I'm running for juror number one. So I guess that's maybe a mitigating factor as to why, you know, they do get that discretion, is because I think there's this assumption as well that, well, if they use that discretion poorly, they won't be reelected. Does that make it any better, or does that not really address the problem for you?
Do people really pay attention to that?
But is that the problem of the prosecutor or prosecutorial discretion, or is it a problem with people?
Yes.
You know, weirdly enough, like, you've described yourself as a rule follower before, mm-hmm. Whereas I've been described as an agent of chaos by you before.
Yes, that's true.
What's weird, though, is I feel like anytime we talk about this, as much of a non-rule follower as I am, I also don't like the ambiguity, even though I can operate within the ambiguity. And I think I've said this before when we talked about justice systems in general. I would much, much rather have a very, very rigid system that if you are found breaking the law, regardless of whether the law is right, regardless of anything else, it should be like police officers should be punished for not arresting or dealing with people. Prosecutors should be held accountable for not prosecuting. Judges should be held accountable for not issuing judgments according to guidelines, you know, and I know the idea is like, wow, I thought you guys didn't like overbearing authority. And the thing is, I don't. But
if you actually enforced all the rules, the BS rules would go away quickly.
Right. Because
people would start getting arrested for really dumb stuff.
Exactly. You know, another thing that I don't like about prosecutorial discretion is it's not just that they can choose whether or not to prosecute you for a specific crime, but there's also this idea of throwing the book at somebody.
Yes. Dude. Ugh.
How do you really feel about it?
I was going to say, don't get me started, but that's the point of the show.
That's this episode. Go ahead. Go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. This idea that, like, a lot of laws are passed, which are completely unenforceable, but get thrown at somebody when they're arrested for something that is actually enforceable. So you can say, well, while we have you here, we're going to charge you with this, that, and the other thing that we caught you doing because we arrested you doing the thing, doing this one thing that we can actually arrest you for. And so you have all these laws that are, and a lot of them don't even have anything to do with the meat of what we're trying to prevent. Like, it'll be like illegal to, you know, maybe possess a certain thing which is associated with something else that we don't like but isn't actually necessarily used for that thing, and you can't possibly catch somebody with it unless you're already arresting them for something else or whatever. Like, you don't have the right to just go searching people for stuff like that. You'd never get a warrant for it or whatever. Or, you know, several like crimes of intent where it's impossible to tell what somebody's trying to do. But after the fact, if they actually do it, then you can go back and throw at them, well, you were, since you actually did this thing, we knew you intended to be doing this thing with this other thing you were doing, so we're going to get you with that as well. And it's just this whole web of things where it's like, not only are you being tried for the thing you actually did, but also this other stuff that doesn't apply to anybody until they're actually in there, and you can just make somebody's life miserable because you want to.
Yeah. Or because,
and throw so much at them. So, and that, now you're like, okay, you thought you were being arrested for this one thing and charged with that, but we're actually going to charge you with like 16 different crimes, and you stand no chance of getting it out of this courtroom without a conviction, so you should just accept a plea deal and not even go to trial.
Right. I think that's taking advantage of two things. One is that juries that convict on one count are more likely to convict on all the other things because they think they're connected. And that has to do with the fact that our legal system is so complicated. It's so complicated that a layman can't interpret it. However, we expect them to be able to when they sit on a jury. Because
yes,
we want layman juries. That's the whole point.
That is the point.
That's supposed to be the ultimate balance and check on the government is, at the end of the day,
what if we round up 12 ordinary guys and set them in a thing and have them watch this trial and decide how it went?
Yeah. Well, and there's also this idea of like making examples out of people. That's one of the biggest bones I have to pick.
Yes.
I have two very clear examples that I think you and I both.
I'm going to treat this person unfairly so that other people will see.
Yeah. And this happens a lot, I think, especially when the law isn't prepared to deal with the situation, but the prosecutor wants to essentially legislate from the bench by making people so afraid of even attempting the thing in question that. Because it takes time to write laws. So if I can scare enough people from away from doing this thing before the law's even written, there's not going to be a big deal about it. So there's two examples that come to mind to me for this off the top of my head. Do you know who Ross Ulbricht is?
Yes.
Do you know who Aaron Swartz is?
That name is really familiar, but I don't remember what he did.
He stole a bunch of academic journals off a JSTOR at MIT. With the goal of...
Oh, yes, this guy. Yes, I do remember that.
Also one of the founding members of Reddit.
Yes.
Also hung himself, TM, before his trial. Both of these people were prosecuted by the federal government of the United States and had the book absolutely thrown at them. Neither of these people hurt anybody. They did not commit any violent crimes, but they committed the worst crime. Using technology that the people prosecuting them did not understand.
Right.
Ross Ulbricht is still in prison and will probably die there.
Ross Ulbricht, for those listening who may not know, created the Silk Road, which was an online like free trading platform where you used Bitcoin to buy whatever.
Mm-hmm. There were only two limits, I think, that he placed, and that is you cannot sell anything. You cannot sell anything that directly hurts someone else. And you cannot, like, which included things like revenge information or weapons. I'm pretty sure you couldn't sell weapons on the Silk Road initially. There's a lot about the Silk Road that is not true. And it's worth a deep dive if you ever want to talk about it to actually look and see. Because there's a lot of covering up about his case as well. Because, again, he had the book absolutely thrown at him. And he took it to court and fought it in court. And anybody, I feel like anybody who watched that trial felt just how unfair it really was. And he's been made out to be quite a villain that I don't believe that he ever really was. And then I think the better case example is someone like Aaron Swartz, who, like I said, he downloaded a bunch of academic journals to make them free so that people could read them. Like he believed in the freedom of information and that knowledge should not be behind a paywall. And this literally meant that he walked into a server room with a USB stick essentially and just downloaded a bunch of journals and walked out with it. That's what he did. And so that doesn't sound too bad. But then when you read the list of charges, he was charged with wire fraud, computer fraud, unlawfully obtaining information from a protected computer, recklessly damaging a protected computer, like all these other charges that all kind of had to do the same thing because the law is not written well to deal with technology-based crimes, because these were written way before computers are the way they are today. Like, some of these laws were written back when computers were the size of rooms, where they were only owned by big, powerful entities like AT&T, you know, and to access one of them was actually to, like, take control of a, or the government had computers like this. That's what these laws were written in mind with, not the personal computer, not the fact that we're using computers more frequently than we ever have before for every little thing, you know? And that's why they carry hefty punishments, because, you know, it's like the difference between you breaking into a military installation and stealing a tank versus breaking into a car and stealing a car. They're both wrong, and they're both illegal, but one's going to carry a way heftier fine and or imprisonment than the other.
I was going to say, or prison, yeah.
So,
this leads me to a tangent about computer security, which is completely off topic, but just briefly. I was speaking to a friend about this recently, who brought up the difference between corporate security and actual security. And the big difference with corporate security is that corporate security is just enough actual security to save them from anything that's going to lose money, and everything else is settled in court.
Yeah.
You don't need to have an actually secure system so long as you can catch the guy who did it and sue for your money back.
Right.
And this is why companies like Microsoft have done well for themselves to convince the public that computer security is impossible and you should just give up.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it isn't, and you can have a secure system, but that would cost them money to make actually secure stuff.
Right. That's true. And these laws are built the same way. They're assuming that, oh, if you steal data off the computer, it's the same as if you go into a house and you steal physical things. Whereas it's much more akin to walking into someone's house illegally and taking a bunch of pictures of what they have in their house. It's about the same, like, I don't know. That's not the point. I'm not really wanting to get down the rabbit hole of, like, computer crimes. That might be a worthy...
You used this thing for a purpose for which it wasn't intended. How dare you?
How dare you?
Because that's pretty much what it is. Like, have you ever connected to a government computer system? You'll get slapped right up front with a big banner message that says, you're connecting to the United States government system. No touchy thing you're not supposed to touchy. Squinty eyes. You better not, or else. Even though you totally could. Like... We didn't actually make this system secure, but if you touch something you're not supposed to, you're going to prison. Like,
right. But in that case, both of those cases, the entire legal system was against the person mainly out of fear. You know, if we can make people afraid to commit crimes, then they won't commit them. And especially people that are more honestly capable than we are at using these systems that we have. You know, I'm not trying to get a big head about it or anything, but, like, as a quick tangent, I hate the phrase learn to code. I think I mentioned that, like, in the last episode.
Yeah, the very last episode.
There's this idea that it's so common and everyone uses it so everyone understands it. But that is absolutely not the case.
Right.
I'm going to do one more tangent down on this because it's a very interesting tangent that I have seen used before, but I think it's a worthwhile thought experiment. If you were to ask people, hey, I'm going to teleport you back to the 1500s, the Middle Ages in Europe, okay? And you can bring three things with you. What three things would you bring, and how do you think it would go? Most people say stupid things like, I would take a gun and I would become king of the world at that time. With cool. All of my modern knowledge as an educated person, I would be more educated than anyone at the time, ergo, I could be in charge.
No, you would not. You would be dead.
You would be dead. You know, another one is, oh, yeah, okay, you're not going to have any modern amenities. Like, yeah, but I could tell people about them. Like, the idea of a car, I'm like, okay, you use a car every
day. Can you teach anyone to build one?
Yeah. Could you build one? Do you know what it takes to build one? Well, roughly, I know the parts. Okay, so let's just take one of the parts. Let's just take the frame, the metal chassis. Okay.
How do you make that?
How do you make them?
With medieval tools.
Yeah. And how do you get the metal? You know, that's not just metal that's dug out of the ground, heated up, and smashed into a shape, right? Like.
Right. It's taken a lot of research and development to get that kind of metal. Yeah.
And I see this attitude the most amongst people who work in offices where, yes, they use a computer every day and they interact with that file system like nobody else. And they might be able to know Excel real good. But just because you use something every day doesn't mean you know how it works. Doesn't mean that you can make that thing. It's a totally different skill. But there's also this weird idea that in how that represents in law is that there's this idea that, well, everyone uses it. But the people who actually can actually understand it and use it in ways that most people don't, that's what scares them. Even though that already exists and permeates through our the world right now with all sorts of other things. Good example. You know what the most readily available, potentially insanely damaging weapon that exists and almost anywhere in the world right now that most people know how to use, but it's not its intended purpose to be a weapon?
A car.
Do you know how many people you could kill with a car?
A lot. I've seen it.
Yeah. But cars are not regulated like that because, oh, well, they're not meant for that, though.
And they're so useful to us.
Yeah. And so, but it's ideas like these that get in the heads of people like prosecutors that now get to decide when you use a thing in a way that they didn't like the way you used it can make your life absolutely terrible. And to some modicum, I understand why we want to have that ability, because there's this idea that just because we can doesn't mean we should. And we don't want to live in a society in which everybody does everything just because they can. I get that. Like, there's a good question for societies about that. Like, as much as I disagree with this idea that, we'll take firearms as an example. Firearms are weapons. They are built with the intention to be used as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They are tools too. Don't get me wrong. But weapons are tools. Weapons are a subgroup of tools.
Yes.
And you can't really use a gun for much else than shooting things,
right?
You know, be it targets for fun or animals for eating or people for protection or tyrants for freedom, you know. Some societies have decided that, you know, it's not worth that risk. You know, we don't even want people using them for what they're intended for, and so they all get together and decide that in their society they're just not going to have them, which, again, as much as I disagree with that personally, I don't have to live in those societies, so fine, have it your way. I think it's wrong, but have it your way over there, and we'll have it our way here, you know? I had to come to peace with that at one point, but at the same time, there's a similar thing that goes on, at least in the United States, when it comes to prosecutorial discretion, is I didn't make a contract with the prosecutor for what society should be like. Like, we have laws for that reason. Like, if anything, if we're going to have a government, its job should be setting societal expectations for what we all think is right and how we should all live. And then when someone operates outside of that, or more appropriately, what things we shouldn't do, everything else is on the table, which is kind of the American way of looking at it, is you can do anything you want, except
everything not forbidden is allowed.
Yes. As opposed to
the reverse for the government. Everything not allowed is forbidden.
Yes.
That's the way it should be anyway.
Sure. But what this prosecutorial discretion allows is for them to make things de facto illegal by prosecuting it. Same thing with the police, you know, make things de facto crimes because the police don't like that you do it. And in that moment, maybe a couple of people in your neighborhood don't like it either, you know, but that's not a contract. Like, that's, even if we were going to go ahead and fall back to the social contract way of viewing something, I think and I know that a lot of people hate the phrase, well, I didn't sign no social contract, but I mean, there is some truth to that. Like, I didn't agree to this, you know, and I would be, but if I was able to and have the discussion and set that up in a community, I would be okay with that, you know?
Right.
Like, I've thought for a long time about what it would be like if I could buy a big enough piece of land on an island that just somehow had happened to not be claimed by some government, and I was going to set up on that island and have my little Ancapistan, you know, freedom land. There's still going to need to be rules. Not because I want to be a tyrant, but at the very least to set expectations. Like, what are we doing here? Like, why would you want to come live here? You know, what are things I'm not okay with, you know?
Yeah.
Good example is there are, I hate that I have to be this way, but, you know, to be fair, there are quite a few people that have a lot of ideas very similar to what we have, David, that have some pretty effed up things that they want to do. like regarding children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not okay with any of those things. I actually do think those are morally egregious and wrong.
Right.
So much so that I would be willing to use violence to stop them from doing it,
mm-hmm.
personally. So anything that I feel that way about probably needs to be a law, you know?
Right.
Does that make me a hypocrite? I don't know. I don't think so. But even if it does, it doesn't matter when it comes to that, you know? But I need people to know if they want to come live in my little Ancapistan freedom land, that kind of thing is not going to be okay.
Right, that's not allowed. Yeah.
Yeah. But it should be... I don't know. I don't know. What do you think is the... What led to this whole thing? Like, this discretion? Like, I know why it exists, because there is this idea that laws are not perfect. Like, you cannot legislate for every little situation, right? But I think that the... And maybe the idea of prosecutorial discretion was you don't have to prosecute people. Right? Like, how would you feel if prosecutorial discretion functioned as such that you could only operate one way? Like, you can only choose not to prosecute, but if you were to prosecute, you have to prosecute the same way each time, which is kind of the same thing, but it would bat away ideas like, for example, if there's not a law against it, you just cannot prosecute against it, or you're held accountable some way, or is it just too complicated?
Okay, one more time.
What if it was in such a way that they were more limited, which is just kind of how it is right now? I feel like the idea that prosecutorial discretion was created so that if a law was written that was wrong, the people wouldn't have to abide by it, and they would not be held accountable for not abiding by it. That was maybe the idea. And so prosecutors that were... found it morally unconscionable to prosecute some behavior that they didn't think was wrong wouldn't have to, even though that's not how it actually kind of gets used all the time now. Like, for example, what if it was built so that it had to be consistent? Like, if you were a prosecutor and you decided in one instance that you were not going to prosecute a certain crime, you could not prosecute anyone for that crime from that point forward. You yourself, until the next person was elected.
No, because I see that breaking down in the technicalities, like, because like another thing that might be happening, like, okay, if a person is suspected of crime ABC, then. And the prosecutor decides not to prosecute it. It could be because they don't like prosecuting that crime, but it could also be because they look at the details and they're like, no, that person didn't commit that crime.
That's a good point, because at the time that the prosecutor,
so you
is
don't
deciding...
want to say that, well, now you can't prosecute crime ABC at all because you didn't prosecute this one. But the real reason was, yeah, but I don't think that person actually did that crime.
But is that the prosecutor's job to decide whether or not someone committed a crime?
It is the prosecutor's job to prove that somebody committed a crime.
But is it their job to decide? I mean, I don't think it is.
How can you prove something if you don't even think it actually happened?
You can think something happened without proving that it was a crime, or thinking that it was a crime. Even you're not making the, like, for example, the prosecutor cannot decide to put someone in prison,
right?
That's not their job. It's a jury's job.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess brings us back to where we started with prosecute every crime. If the person is arrested, you have to prosecute them. Now, it's maybe not your fault that they were arrested, and it won't be your fault when they're convicted or not, but you have a job to do and you need to do it, you know? Same thing with the police. It's not your job to determine necessarily, and this is where it gets kind of, I think, messier, is, okay, is it the police's job to determine whether a crime has been committed or not? If you create a system where they have to arrest everybody that may have committed a crime, then they're going to just start arresting people all the time, whether they committed a crime or not, out of... Especially if you have to build in some accountability to make sure they actually do this, you know?
Right. I feel like you want the reverse for the police. Mm-hmm. Don't arrest somebody unless you're sure they committed a crime.
Right. I mean, I think what would work out better is a system where... But then you get into like pre-trialing where it's almost like you have to take the you have to take it to court to determine whether a crime was committed, which is kind of what a warrant is, by the way.
Yeah, kind of.
The judge has
right. You're pretty much telling the judge, yeah, this guy did it. Give us the authorization to come take his stuff or arrest him. Yeah.
Right. Hmm. I don't know. I feel you know what I feel like would help a lot is if it wasn't. It could not. It, okay, so where does this process all start, right? Where does it begin? If we're at the point where a person is being arrested, where did it all begin? You know, and this is a dangerous game because you can go forever. But mm-hmm. where is the point at which the government? What was the step right before the government got involved, right? I think there's two realistic scenarios. One, a law enforcement officer sees you do a thing. He sees it, or she sees it, and goes, hmm, and then it gets the wheels a-turning about whether or not that's illegal or not. Or, something is reported to them.
Right.
Another, presumably citizen, rats you out, or says, this person did a thing. Or a crime was committed, and I don't know who did it, but I know that it happened.
Yeah, someone here did this.
Someone did something. If I either know what the thing is, and who did it, or just what the thing is, and don't know who did it.
Actually, sometimes it's even more ambiguous than that, because there's also suspicion of crime. I see somebody around here who looks suspicious.
That's fine, too. I mean, but that's the step before the law enforcement gets involved.
Right.
You know, so at that point, if none of those things happen, you will never be arrested, right?
Right.
Or no one would ever be arrested. So... And I've talked before about how I hate that people use the police as their muscle.
Mm-hmm.
It is one thing if you are actually legitimately afraid or you are incapable or you want help. You know, that's one thing. But if you just see someone doing something and you don't like it and you call the police.
You are the worst kind of person.
You are the worst kind of person. You are a busybody. Even if you have honest intentions and are actually just concerned about something. Take care of it yourself if it's that bothersome.
Go ask what they're doing. Yeah, I've been the victim of this before.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really serious came of it, but it did inconvenience me and ruin my day that day. Because somebody didn't know what I was doing, thought it was suspicious, and then instead of asking me, hey, what are you up to? They just call the police, and the police come and say, hey, what are you up to? Well... get out, essentially.
Yeah, we don't know if it's illegal or not, but there's a person over here that keeps calling us and we want to make them happy, even though
go away.
So go away and stop making them upset.
Yeah,
you know, where's the accountability for that person?
There is none.
There should be.
Yes, there should. And to this day, I'm still very upset at myself in that situation, because it was probably a situation that I could have gotten out of anyway. I probably could have responded back and said that I was completely within the bounds of the rules, but I didn't go out of my way to actually read all of the rules for the place to make sure that I could recite them and that kind of thing, because that's the situation I was in. Because I could have said, well, is it against the rules? And he could have said it, yes, and I would have had nothing to fight back against.
Yep, and the burden's on you. Really.
Right, and it's not like this is a large place and the rules were far away, so I would have had to go for a walk to go find the posted rules again. So it would have been a situation where it's like, okay, well, I have to pack up my stuff and basically leave anyway. And then is the officer going to follow me all the way there so I can say, look, it doesn't say anywhere on here that I can't do this. Only to also risk the officer saying, yeah, but get out anyway. Or... the officer leaves, I go out there, see that it's not against the rules, and then go back to what I was doing, and now I've just disobeyed the order to leave, and I'm trespassing.
Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really do think maybe the best way that you deal with a situation like that, like where you deal, how you deal with prosecutorial discretion is that you just make it to where everybody has to do their job. But the problem when you get to officers is that when do they have to do their job? And if you look at this instance that, you know, precipitates that, I would be fine with it starting with citizens, right? So there are two of the three cases we listed before that do start with citizens, and that's where a citizen sees something and they call the police, or, well, that's kind of the same thing. They either see someone doing something suspicious, but they're not sure whether it's a crime or not, or you see something, the result of a crime, and then you call the police about that. I'm fine with both of those being the starting point because it starts with citizens, and then you can hold citizens accountable for when they engage the police. Like, for example, if it is determined that a crime did not take place, it should be maybe on the citizens to pay for the usage of the police.
Right. And I mean, we already kind of halfway have a thing for this. Like, it's illegal to abuse the 911 emergency number. If you call 911 for not an emergency, it's against the law.
Okay, but what's an emergency?
Right. That's the problem. And then, like, if you really do think that somebody is breaking the law, right, then, you know, then you can make an appeal to mens rea. Like, well, they weren't maliciously trying to get somebody in trouble. They just thought that something bad was happening and they wanted to, it was an emergency to them, so they called about it.
But who's responsible for ensuring that that process has begun? Like, who's going to seek that recompense? The police? Or should it be the person who the police were called on, right? I would assume either could, but I feel
right, like it could be the police saying, like, yeah, like, if this one person is either a busybody or just perpetually scared of everything, then they need to have, the police would want a way to say, look, stop calling us.
Right.
You're wasting our time. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, if a person is using the police to harass a person, that person should be able to sue them and say, look, you're harassing me by way of the police.
Well, I don't even think it should be that they should be able to sue them for that, but that's civil, right?
Right.
See, here's, I think, the issue you get into, right? Say there is the town busybody, so you live in a pretty small town of like 100 people, and this person happens to live on the hill in the center of town and can see everybody, very panopticon style. And they can just see everybody, and they're crotchety, and they hate everyone, and they just love calling the police and watching people get in trouble. So they just sit on their front porch all day in the rocking chair and like watch for people to be doing anything sketchy and just be like, hey, I don't like that. Call the police. And they're functioning essentially as the police dispatcher at that point. But they call the police to go over there and take care of it, okay? So the police get involved at that point, and you just look up the hill and see the person. Like, I think that you should... I can see why people don't like this, but I think that it's better that it's this way than not. I hate that the identity of the people who call the police is protected all the time. I can understand not giving it out immediately, right? But I should have, like, if I'm being...
Before I am tried, yeah, I should be able to face my accuser.
Right. But see, that's the problem. They're not accusing you. The prosecutor is.
Right. So I get to face the prosecutor. But, right. But the prosecutor isn't who accused me, actually, though.
Sure. Now, don't get me wrong. In actual trials, in order for them to verify that the 911 call was real and that it actually happened from a legitimate person, your defense attorney can absolutely subpoena that person to get up on the stand and in front of you and say what happened. So that kind of already is a thing, right? But I think that there needs to be this idea, like, because right now there's this idea that if the police do something illegal to bait you into a crime or to find out that you committed a crime, you're off the hook. Like, for example, if the police just search your house and find evidence of a crime, that's not admissible because they didn't get a warrant, right? I think that there should be a similar level of scrutiny applied to the people who call the police, where it's like, did you actually think that something bad was happening? You know, what were your real motives for calling the police? And if the motives were poor, but the police ended up finding out that there was a crime anyway, you should also get off the hook, because the whole process started under false pretenses. It just was a person, not the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that might be a good catch-all. Now, granted, you're also now having the system where the police might like this person. The prosecutor might also like this person, right? they may like having a busybody that allows them to kind of do whatever they want because they're going to be a busybody anyway. So they'll protect that person at all costs. And it could go as high as the judge also hates that person. Fortunately, we still have jurors, but you can also run into a case where maybe you're in a 49% majority or minority in the population, and this busybody is in the 51% majority. So now the majority can tyrannize the minority in that case. But I don't know. I feel like there needs to be accountability for that. And like, I think it all goes back to that as being the problem. And if that were the case, then prosecutorial discretion loses a lot of weight. So does police discretion. And then you just make it so that police cannot, of their own volition, the police should not be watchdogs, right? The police are not security. They're investigators. Like, that's what they're supposed to be. They are supposed to investigate and protect. They're not supposed to necessarily, like... And by protect, I guess, I mean, they serve as a form of public protection when asked to be used. They should not operate of their own behest. Like, I hate the... And you really start thinking about that. It kind of applies to a lot of agencies, like the DEA. No one calls the DEA for a drug crime, right? The DEA investigates just on their own. They go looking for crimes that have been committed. And not only that, but their success or failure is determined by how many crimes they solve. You know, same thing with the FBI. You know, their success or failure is determined by how many cases they crack or whatever, you know, like... But we've seen instances of the DEA setting up sting operations on people they allowed to do drugs, right, for a while. Like, mm-hmm. they'll set up a bust by giving out drugs to people undercover to then bust them for being in possession. Like, they're creating crime in order to
they're literally
people.
Committing a crime as well.
Yeah, but that's fine. They can do that.
Right.
Because they're the government.
Right.
And the only people that are allowed to break the law is the government. Right?
What law?
Exactly. Who's going to prosecute me? Me? You know, like the government? Yeah. No, this happens all the time. Like, there's conspiracy by a bunch of people to get some governor and, like, put her on a boat and, like, push her out into a lake for some policies that she made. And it turns out that 3 of the 5 people that were kind of involved or something like that were feds working the people up to do it.
Right.
And getting them to make the plans so that they can arrest them at the final moment and be like, aha, I caught you red-handed. And then take them to trial over it. Now, fortunately, entrapment laws exist and all 4 of those people were either acquitted or hung juried, which was good. Legal system actually worked there. But why are we wasting all this money and resources trying to get people to commit crimes? You know?
Right.
I think that's
completely backwards.
It's completely backwards. You know? So maybe, but at the same time, as a person who looks at the world through a system of incentives, it makes sense. Like, if you and I's job were to, if we got paid for every rabbit pelt that we brought in, for example, we'd just start breeding rabbits.
Right.
More
even
pelts.
Even if the original reason we were getting paid to bring those pelts in was to prove that we were reducing the population.
Mm-hmm. I can forget what it was. It may not have been rabbits. I think it was maybe rats. There was this group of people that were paid like 5 cents for every rat or something like that. They were fine because it was like this huge rat problem. But instead of killing the rats and bringing their tails in, they would just cut the tails off and let them live because they'd go have more babies that would have tails, and mm-hmm. they cut their tails off and sell them. You know? So I don't fault necessarily the people who do this from the perspective of the system of incentive. It just makes sense. They're maximizing their reward function, essentially. So how do we make the reward function not reward that? Like, if the thing is less crime, how do you reward there being less crime without having them do nothing? You know, because that's
right. Because the opposite thing is, yeah, your reward goes up for, you know, how few arrests there are, because that must mean there's fewer crimes. But then you just sit in your chair all day and don't do anything.
That's my biggest pet peeve with statistics that talk about crime.
Mm-hmm.
just because that's how many crimes were reported does not mean that's how many crimes were committed. And just because something was reported as a crime doesn't mean it was a crime.
Right.
You know? So maybe you make the reward function. Okay, so like, let's take the simplest approach. So reward function rewards you for crimes that you either prevent or solve, right? The crime has to happen and then you have to solve it. Or you have to prove in a pretty reasonable way that the crime was going to be committed, which the courts already do that kind of thing. You can be arrested for intent to commit a crime. That's a crime.
Yeah.
It's illegal to intend to do something illegal.
Mm-hmm.
even if you haven't done it yet. So those exist. So you're rewarded for that, but you're also rewarded by that number decreasing with time, right? So how do you stop people from, and if those are rewarded equally, you can't have both. So you'll end up as different places gravitating towards one or the other strategy. You either stop reporting crimes and stop investigating crimes, or you just make more crimes and maximize that side of the function. It both give you a plus one, right? I think maybe what you do is you give it a plus, you add like a minus two to every crime that you are apprehended or caught in having entrapped people, and then you make entrapment laws stronger. Which then leads to one of two things happening. People will do what you actually want, which is, well, they'll do the easier of the two things. Either just be fine, only going after crimes that are legitimate, or they'll get really good at entrapping people around the law and exploiting legal loopholes. Those are like the, whichever is easier they'll do, you know, in general. So I don't know if that's just, it's that simple as a fix, but I think it would help, you know. Or you just apply severe consequences to entrapment.
Right. Actually send people to prison for entrapment.
Yeah. No joke. That's my biggest pet peeve. You know how many politicians have committed crimes that they've admitted to on the stand, but how many of them never serve a day in prison? Like, when's the last time you heard about politicians going to actual jail?
Right.
It just doesn't happen. And I think most people see that and gripe about that. I think that's something that most people look at and go, yeah, that's BS. Regardless of whether or not you like that politician or not, regardless of whether or not, you know...
No. Yeah. No. Everyone sees that that's unfair. You're part of the special club, and so you get to do what you want.
Yeah. The rule followers hate it because they see a rule being broken and the person not being punished. And the people who aren't rule followers hate it because they see the people who are rule followers are supposed to be like king rule follower being one of them. And... but also getting everyone else in trouble for not following the rules. So yeah, I think...
Right, it's hypocrisy.
It's yeah. Exactly. That's the key nugget. It's hypocrisy. Blatant hypocrisy, and everyone hates it. You know, I think it would be absolutely wonderful. There should be a political prison, almost.
Exclusively for politicians?
Just for politicians. And government officials.
Right.
And it shouldn't be run by the government. It should be run on volunteers only. From the citizens.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Where do I sign?
Where do I sign? Right here. Cool. Can't wait. You know? I don't know. I don't know. It's tricky. It's tricky biscuit for sure. But I mean, if you look at history though, it kind of all comes out in the wash in the end for most governments. Coups exist for a reason, I suppose. You know, maybe we just normalize revolutions, you know?
Make government afraid again.
Make the government afraid. Yeah. I mean, I think in sedition, make that okay. Make that, like, I don't know. I hate this idea. I mean, okay. One man's revolutionary or one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
It really do be like that, though, kind of. I'm not saying that, you know, I have my particular favorite terrorists or anything like that. But I don't know. There are some that I just happen to think are more egregious than others, personally. You know? Robespierre had some good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I just hate that the whole goal of setting up democracy is to avoid that, though. Like, the goal of any government is to continue to exist, right? You don't want...
Right, coups suck.
Yeah, they suck for everybody.
Yes. War is bad.
War bad, coups suck. you know, revolutions suck harder than coups because...
Right, and they're super risky, too. Like, yes, you get rid of the system that you hate, but who knows what's going to fill the vacuum.
Right. Well, and oftentimes it's a worse system, temporarily, at least.
Right, because now violence is back on the table.
Yeah, it's hard to take violence off the table once it's on the table. And typically, the only way it comes off the table is when the threat of violence gets so great that no one wants to continue it.
Right.
You know? Like a coup d'etat where, like, it's like a small group of people in the military just unseat a ruler. And, like, if you look at successful coups, that's kind of how they happen. Like, Myanmar is a good example. I'm not saying what happened there was good, necessarily, but a general and a couple of politicians and a small subgroup of the military really did not like something that the current leader of that country was doing. And so they just walked in and took over the government, and everyone, and violence was over. Like, violence is, it was swift and over.
Yeah. Guns come out, get pointed. Do you surrender? Yes, I surrender. Okay, we're done.
Cool. No more violence necessary. And now everyone's looking at this and like, man, I don't like that. I hate that that happens. Like, well, are you going to perform a coup?
No.
No. Well, then you got to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, then it just happened, yeah.
Well, tough, you know? And that's that government still sits today. Like, it was a very effective coup. You know, I think you have those, and you have the very long, drawn-out, very sad coups that are usually involve other governments getting their fingers involved. Libya comes to mind. But... And those typically don't just, and those do more damage because they tend to destabilize an entire area. Like, infrastructure gets destroyed, and once you have a lack of infrastructure, you have the lack of the ability to support a continually functional economy. And it gets to the point where violence just becomes acceptable it becomes normalized to the point where that's just how your society deals with problems temporarily as well. I need to eat this week and I'm going to go to the grocery store. And I swear if that Karen takes the last loaf of bread again, I'm going to put one in the back of her hand. Like, and people just, that's just how it goes, you know? And then people get raised in that, and that's how they solve problems. And it takes a very, very long time. And sadly, usually a very, very strong, usually very violent person to come to the forefront to be the main violent person, and they put violence to an end. Like,
right.
I mean, you know,
the biggest thug has to step up and make the violence stop.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't know much about the country of Iraq before the Iraq War, but that's essentially who Saddam Hussein was. He was the biggest bully, and there was not a whole lot of violence except that bit that was... I'm not saying that there wasn't violence, but there was not widespread violence like there is now, because that was reserved for, you know, the people in charge.
Right, Saddam and his goons.
Yeah. Saddam and his goons. But if you were just a lowly goat herder in the fields, then it's fine, whatever. Like, you probably won't ever see his goons, and it's fine. And most people... There was a system of structure in place. Like, there were laws written that if you break them, or you just looked at, and those laws may have been ridiculous, like, don't look at Saddam the wrong way, you know, or don't treat his family with disrespect, but...
Cool, but I live in the middle of nowhere, and I'm never going to see Saddam, so who cares?
Exactly. As opposed to now, when, well, it's not so much now, but, like, and you have actual militant bands of people...
Right, gangs, roving gangs.
Roving gangs across the countryside and in the cities, all fighting with each other. It's more violence spread out. It includes intense moments of violence too, just like the previous regime did, but there's more of it. And there's no one bad guy you can really point to, you know? I don't know. That it's weird to think about the world, I guess, in those terms, you know? But that's not really what we're talking about. But, like,
yeah, we got way off track.
We really did. Why do we need to stop prosecutorial discretion? Because if we don't do it now, eventually...
Saddam Hussein takes over.
Saddam Hussein will take over the United States of America. But to be fair, that's kind of how it is. Every drop in the bucket where the government overreaches is incurring a debt to liberty. And at some point, that tree's going to need to get watered. Okay? I'm just saying, like, there's a line out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it is. And that's the thing. No one really knows where it is.
Until it's crossed.
But once it's crossed, you can't go back. Like,
right.
And it's not for me. It's not my line. I mean, you and I have talked before about, like, where's the line for us? if the goons show up at our house to take away our guns or take away or arrest us or whatever, like, where's the line where it's like, well, I guess a blaze of glory is my only option at this point because I ain't doing it anymore. Everybody might have that line, but there's a bigger line. There's the critical mass line where if enough people get the feeling that way,
you go on the offensive.
It flips. And at that point, you almost can't stop it because anything you do to try to stop that group of people, even if you do it as non-violently as possible,
you'll probably get shot.
Your people will die.
Yeah.
And when your people start dying, then people who are on that side of things will start wanting the other side to die. It just escalates, you know, by it. At that point, it becomes a rolling blaze and you just can't stop it, you know. And every government wants to avoid that as much as possible because that's the end of that government and they will be blamed for everything that happens, if especially if they lose. But even if they win, good example, about 150 years ago, 170 years ago, I guess now, maybe more than that, part of the United States didn't want to be a part of the United States anymore. Mm-hmm. And people are still butthurt about it. Even not, and not for certain reasons or whatever. People are still upset about it. This nation is still not healed over that. And that was generations ago.
Right.
So, and we're not even the best example. Look at sub-Saharan Africa, how that's going. You know, there are groups of people who have been tribal ancestral enemies and feuding for hundreds of years that now that they have governments, they still hate each other. Same thing in the Middle East. Different flavors of Islam, you know, still hate each other and have hated each other for a long, long time, you know. And how can you maintain a national unity if one group of people is always going to oppress another group of people? Now, these are a little more clean because at least in the case of, you know, Islam in the Middle East, there's different sects of Islam. So you can draw the boundaries. But when the boundary gets drawn between pro-government and anti-government, it's one of those things where you're not born into either caste of those, really. And it's hard to say who's who, you know? I don't know.
And witch hunts emerge.
Oh, yeah. That's another terrible thing.
That's a topic for a different day.
McCarthyism. Yeah, that's a whole other... Witch hunts would be a good topic in general. We should add that to the list. But I guess back to the topic of prosecutorial discretion. I don't know. I don't think that the best answer is to just, well, prosecute all the laws. And I think that is an answer. I think it's a crappy answer at first because there are going to be a lot of people arrested for a lot of stupid things. Maybe the one thing you'd want to address before that is making it to where if something you did that was illegal, if you were arrested and punished for that, if it was no longer illegal, you should be, you know, stop being punished for that. Like if you're in prison for a crime that's now no longer a crime,
you should be released immediately.
You should be released immediately. And I think you should be paid, like, there should be some kind of restitution for that.
Maybe.
It depends.
I think being released is enough.
I don't know. If you were in jail for 30 years for doing something that is now no longer illegal and it's found to be no longer illegal because there was never actually anything really wrong with it in the first place, I'd be pretty PO'd.
Yes, I would be. Maybe it should be a separate matter, but...
Yeah, there should be civil routes for that.
Right. Yeah, or civil routes for it, or like, okay, if you're going to repeal a thing, then you can also make like a separate, you know, addendum to it that can be voted on separately of, and we're also going to pay reparations to these people. Essentially, because that's essentially what we're doing at that point, is we're saying that society was wrong and we're gonna pay you for that.
Well, the government was wrong and we'll pay you for that, but go on.
Right.
Because it's usually society's not the one who wanted that in the first place.
But society is who will pay for it. So
exactly.
I think if we were gonna pass a general law, I think a law should be passed if someone who is currently enduring punishment for something that for breaking a law that has since been repealed, the punishment is to cease immediately. And that's a good rule to just leave there. And then as far as reparations are concerned, that can be done on a case-by-case basis and voted separately.
I agree. But once you have that system in place, I think then you turn up the heat as well. There needs to be a grace period, right? You make the law that all prosecutors have to prosecute every single crime reported to them. And I think that's all you need, right? Because then prosecutors will keep the police in check as far as like, hey, stop reporting these things to me. I hate prosecuting them. And then you move down the chain to the police, and then you make the police thing where if they report it as a crime, it has to be, because I think that's where it really the rubber hits the road, because there are a lot more police than there are prosecutors. And while the police are not necessarily elected, their boss is, and they're the people you actually interact with on a daily, you know, those people. You're more likely to know a police officer that's in your town or locality than you are to know the prosecutor.
Yeah.
And the ratio of police or law enforcement to, you know, civilians is a lot, you know, there are a lot more of them. So I think that's where you need to get to. So you might as well just do that from the onset where, as a general rule, all police policy must be to enforce every law on the books. And if you can be audited for not doing so and lose your job over it. And then you just make it, and I hate to say it, but you have to make it someone's job, or just make it the citizen's job, where that's what you do. You turn the tattletales against the police, to where if the tattletale wants the police to come in and, you know, arrest somebody for doing something that they don't like, you give an avenue for that person to also tell on the police. And then you use the tattletales to your advantage, and you don't have to set up a government agency that now you also have to pay for to provide oversight to the police. You know, you just provide a direct route to the prosecutor for filing complaints against the police. And then it's the prosecutor's job, or you hire a lawyer and take them to court yourself, and they can have, you know, fines and stuff levied at them.
Right. That should just be easier to do.
And yeah, once you do that, you set that system up, and then you give it a grace period of like a year. And that gives prosecutors and police enough time to really start badgering politicians to start making some of these things not illegal anymore, please. Which they won't, because they don't ever do anything until enough people complain. And there's not enough people, I think, amongst prosecutors and police to actually care. But what will end up happening is police will just start to quit. They just won't do it. Like, I'm not going to be a cop if I can go to jail for not arresting somebody, even though I really want to arrest people. You know, what you'll end up with is a concentration of people who love to arrest people in the police. And then you'll have a full force of people that everyone actually hates. And that's how laws will get changed. And then they can't do anything about it, you know? And I'm sorry, I don't care. If you're a cop and says this sounds horrible, I'd hate that. It's like, well, don't do that job then. You know, maybe we don't need you in the first place. Or maybe we only need you to actually do things that you would be fine suffering these consequences for. If it's actually about serving and protecting people, then you'll do that, even if it might involve you taking a bullet. If you're willing to catch a bullet for people, why are you not willing to get sued for people?
Right.
So either quit being a hypocrite and do your job, or quit. I don't care. Either one. Private security will probably have a lot more demand now that the police are less willing to investigate certain things. Go do that. And I'm more fine with that, because that's just a person now. We're on an even playing field now. You know, if you're a jerk who's a private security person, we're on even playing field. I can sue the crap out of you as a person and take your livelihood, you know, and if you're abusing your power, like I can't to the police, because they're protected by some kind of qualified immunity.
Right.
Which that should have been another topic. We should have discussed more on this one, but maybe next time. But anyway. I think I'm good ranting about the police and prosecutors and government today. It's been healthy.
Yes.
My blood pressure's up a little bit, but you know what? It's fine. Do you have anything else to add?
No.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.